you?
Morning.
Morning,
AG.
Morning
to you.
Recording in progress.
Morning, Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members and anyone on the platform.
Morning, Chairperson. Morning, leadership and morning, AJ.
Morning, everyone. Morning, Chair.
Morning.
Honorable Matafa, good morning. Honorable Mdenzana. Honorable Singh, the Attorney General. Honorable Singh, are you there?
Yes, I am, Chairperson. I think you're expecting me not to be here, but I'll be in and out, but I'll be here for now.
No, but forget about negotiations.
Negotiations are done, Chairperson. We are done, Honorable Singh.
Now we have to manage them,
Honorable Whip Mamabolo.
How are you, Chairperson?
Aye, fine.
Good.
Hey, tight.
Colleagues, the time now is 9:31. It's not our intention to delay anybody as part of this program, as you would take note of the facts. But what we are saying jokingly to Honorable Singh is what is actually pertaining in the country over. So we don't have to delay anybody. AG, I see that you are ready with your report. Today you are supposed to be looking into your draft strategy. Can we as well welcome the news of the recognized good performance of your office when your former chief executive officer, chief financial officer, Mamungoma, has received such accolades, three in all, as a best performing as CFO in the country, is something which we need to really welcome as a further the cap of the office of the Auditor General. Can we, colleagues, are there any apologies, Peter Paul?
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. Ladies and gentlemen, Chair, for the record, no, certainly don't have any apologies received for this particular meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Just to note Honorable Singh's indication, he is in the meeting, but he'll be just traveling between the meeting. Welcome, colleagues. This is the meeting, as I say, where the Auditor General is expected to give us a brief on the strategic plan of the Office of the Auditor General 2022-2025. As you would know, the AG's office is charged with a onerous task of ensuring that the actual fiscal allocations are spent prudently right through the country for all those who have received such allocations through performing the annual audits on such financials. Though from time to time, as we have seen during the pandemic, that there was a call for real-time audit, something which is still a talk of the nation. We really need to appreciate that stunning work by the office in a short space of time to ensure that such audits do take place and certain referrals are made, and the topical matters remain with various institutions which ought to enforce the law in terms of the expenditure and management of such funds. So in appreciation, we need to thank the AG for such sterling work. We are to give over to the Office of the Auditor General in terms of the our agenda, which is clear and short, is that we're going to receive this brief, and we set time for ourselves to look thereafter into detail on matters which are somewhat recommendations for the change in taking this scope of the strategy forward. Can I give over to you, AG, in the team?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and I'd like to greet all of the honorable members that are on the platform today, and as well as my colleagues and all that are here present. Chair, as you've said, there's a lot going on, so we, as an audit office, are grateful that the honorable members of SCOA have made the time to meet with us and deliberate on our future. We spent some time thinking about where we are going as an institution, and we would like to use this opportunity to share with you the thinking that we set out in our draft strategic plan and budget, which we submitted to you on the 30th of September. And to get the benefit of your collective wisdom as you guide us in this work. The discussion points that I'll go through, I'll start off by just recapping briefly on the achievements that we've been able to register under the work of the strategy that was called the 4B strategy. We've been implementing this strategy for the last 7 years, since 2015, and this is the last year of implementing the strategy. I'll also talk about our own analysis of the context within which we currently operate and what that means for South Africa's Supreme Audit Institution. And then I'll share with you our strategy, which will take us to 2030, as well as the commitments that we're making and the goals that we set out for the period under which we'll be implementing the strategy. After we shared this information, which is really based on the work of the executive leadership of the AGSA, we will take into account your feedback and input. We'll fine-tune our documentation, and then we'll be able to share the strategy with our staff and the office. The DAG will help me talk about the budget from 2022 to 2023 for the year that starts on the 1st of April 2022. And then we'll share with you just very briefly some minor amendments we'd like to make to the audit directive. So if we look at the 4B strategy, which as I said is currently in its final year of implementation, it has guided us to even greater success as an institution. Much like its predecessor strategy, the Siyangoma strategy, the 4B strategy served us extremely well. In that time, we've been able to maintain our independence, and you would have seen the World Bank acknowledgement of this very recently. We've also had the benefit of having our powers amendment so that we can follow up on the implementation of the recommendations made by the AG, which is one of the pillars of a truly effective and independent side. Over the time, we've also been able to enhance our professionalism. For example, you'll see that the number of professionals in the institution has increased in leaps and bounds, with deep and diverse expertise that's available to the audit office to execute on its mandate. We've strengthened our training programs across all levels, and we've continued to lead by example in managing ethics, in demonstrating good governance, and also in contributing to the growth and transformation of the accountancy profession. And all this whilst we've been efficient in running our operations. in that time, we've also been able to demonstrate increased relevance. And if you look at our different audit reports, including the real-time audits that you speak of, Honorable Chair, seeing the coverage of the audit areas that we're able to deal with, the nature and complexity of the audits we've taken on over time, and even our international presence, tells you that the independence, the professionalism, and the relevance of the institution is pretty strong. So it provides a wonderful base on which that we can build. I come now to the context within which we operate. If I start with a look at what the audit outcomes tell us. Every year we report on the PFMA and the MFMA cycle, and what we tend to report on is that we're seeing limited progress on the state of financial management, performance management, and compliance of institutions that we audit. And these messages are of concern not only for the AGSA and for government, but also for this parliament as well as for citizens. In the PFMA cycle, and we are getting ready now to share with Parliament the PFMA audit outcomes for 2021. But if you look at the trend over the last few years, you know that financial reporting has been improving in that a number of the auditees in the PFMA audit cycle, they're able to publish credible financial information. But the challenge remains performance information as well as compliance. If you look at the smaller departments or the smaller entities, they are the ones that get the clean audits because they're able to deal with financial reporting, performance information, and compliance. The bigger departments, the bigger state-owned entities, the bigger public entities, where the big budgets are, where the impact on key service delivery matters is felt. That's where we struggle, not only with financial management, but specifically with performance information and with compliance. And it's always a worry for us because we're seeing that these entities and these departments which carry these big departments are able to attract and retain competent staff to do the work that really should demonstrate well-run institutions that deliver on their mandate and report on their work transparently and in a manner that ensures accountability. That's not happening. So we worry about where or how to shift back to that towards a greater effectiveness. And even when I say that performance financial information that's published is credible, what is often missed is that many of the auditees that are able to get credible financial information published do so on the back of having had the AG give them an opportunity to correct their misstatements. Now, yes, we talk about how it makes the audit process difficult and expensive, but importantly, it tells you that the disciplines of managing financial management, the disciplines of prudent financial management on an ongoing basis, those disciplines are not yet stable. So whilst we may celebrate credible financial information that's published, if you look deeper, you're seeing that just the culture of maintaining stable financial management practices, that's not yet in place. And we're seeing that same picture in the performance management cycle as well. If you look at the MFMA outcome, local government has been regressing on financial management, performance management, accountability, and transparency for a great deal of time, and that has a detrimental impact on the municipalities as institutions, but also a detrimental impact on the experience of the very communities that those municipalities are meant to serve. In fact, our annual MFMA report, including the most recent one, tell a number of stories of municipalities where funds are spent, but no one is accounting transparently for that expenditure, where residents are left with no access to reliable electricity supply, no access to reliable water supply, quality water, where infrastructure is deteriorating due to a lack of maintenance and even neglect. And I'm aware that the honourable members are only too familiar with these messages, but it's important for us to set it out as part of the context within which we are shaping our strategy. When we look at the audit outcomes, it's quite clear that there are instances of abuses of public resources. When we report on ever-rising levels of unauthorized, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure or irregular expenditure, citizens grapple with relating these technical terms with their own experience of services that are being delivered by public institutions. And so they struggle to figure out what does this audit message mean, as upsetting as it might be to hear about irregular expenditure, to hear about frivolous expenditure. What's really sitting at this thing, and how does it relate to the type of services I'm able to get or I'm able to expect from these public institutions? We are often at pains, Honorable Chairperson and members, that we are often at pains to say these instances of irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, unauthorized expenditure, those are best resolved by implementing controls to prevent, to detect, and to act on wrongdoing. You've heard us say that in a lot of times. You might remember that the now late AG, my predecessor, Magwedu, talked about the need to reverse a culture of impunity. Those with slightly longer memories may even recall that his predecessor, AG Mombembe, used to talk about the need to shift from a culture of tolerating transgressions and poor performance. So that's the context where we are looking at these audit outcomes from. Beyond the numbers, beyond the findings and the audit outcomes and the graphs and the colors in those graphs, is the reality that the capability of state institutions to respond to the needs and wants of citizens, that is being eroded. The impact can be seen in the inability to meet service delivery demands and to meet the promises or to deliver on the promises that are made to citizens, whether it's about water, sanitation, electricity, healthcare, education, housing and shelter. And as I say, when these headlines and the public discourse about billions of irregular expenditure come through, there's also a debate that says, was the money always lost? Is there corruption when you see a big number of irregular expenditure? Our view is that the messages demonstrate that there are persistent weaknesses in the systems of transparency, of accountability, and of performance. It's that these same weaknesses that we keep talking about that actually compromise the capacity and the financial health of public institutions. It is these same weaknesses that diminish the confidence that citizens ought to have in these institutions and the confidence and trust that citizens ought to have in the people that are appointed and elected to lead those institutions. And, you know, what's quite clear is that the diminishing trust between citizens and these institutions is having the impact of people either opting out of public services, but worse still, driving service delivery protests and even opting out of the democratic processes. So when we look at this, we say, and I think if you can move to the next slide, please. When we look at this, we note that when citizens lose trust in institutions, it's not only limited to losing trust on government or on specific institutions. All of us who run institutions ought to be worried about this trend of diminishing trust in institutions, even those of us who are heading up constitutional institutions. At the AGSA, we're seeing a cynicism, some cynicism about the value of a clean audit, and it may have been specifically raised in the context of the local government elections, but it's been an issue that keeps coming up, right? And what that tells us is people are starting to question the value of an audit process, the value of a clean audit, how that relates to their lives. They're questioning the value of even having an independent side. So some of the headlines we saw when the World Bank pronounced on our independence was that, well, so much for that accolade, but what does it really do for me as a citizen? So we believe that these questions invite us to consider tweaking how we audit and report so that our audit messages are better understood and that they have greater resonance with our audiences, so that all that read our audit reports, all those that interact with our audit messages, can actually relate those messages to the lived reality. It's also an invitation, this cynicism, this criticism, it's also an invitation for us to find ways to make our work more impactful so that we contribute to improving the value and the benefits that citizens can experience from public institutions. We also note that with these new powers, there is heightened demand for action by the AG, with a very high expectation of the impact that the AGSA can make in driving consequence management and in protecting resources. So as a side, we can't ignore these noises, we can't ignore these messages, we can't ignore these signals and indicators. Ours is to take them in as we look at what is the context in which we are operating and consider how they invite us to stretch ourselves, to do more, to drive greater relevance, to drive increased resonance, and to improve the impact and then the value of the work that we do. So before I even take you to the strategy, I want to assert a few things. I want to assert that our mandate is still as stated in the Constitution. Our role is still stipulated as per Chapter 9 to strengthen constitutional democracy. We are an organ of state with the constitutional obligations and responsibilities as set out. And our job is really to focus on strengthening our constitutional democracy. We operate on the basis of the functions that are assigned in the Public Water Act, and with the recent amendments, which have us play an even stronger role in driving consequence management, in working collaboratively with other players in the systems of accountability. So that's our mandate remains ever the same. In fact, you may have even have noted that we've not changed our vision or even our reputation from it. What we are doing in taking account of the context under which we're operating is also drawing guidance and inspiration from a few places internationally. We look to the UN, which through its resolution recognizes the role that size play and can play in promoting the efficiency, accountability, effectiveness, and transparency of public administration. And the UN further asserts that this work would be conducive to helping countries achieve their development goals and commitments. We look to InfoSci. Our global colleagues have a standard which guides all of the SIs across the world as they seek to realize value and benefits for citizens. So this standard called InterSci P12 on value and benefits, it sets out how SIs can best position themselves to remain relevant as contributors to strengthening the accountability, the transparency, and the integrity of public institutions, so that those institutions, in turn, can deliver sustained benefit to citizens. Incidentally, it is also the same standard, P12, that sets out that in order to demonstrate ongoing relevance to its citizens, parliament, and other stakeholders, the SAI of any country must be responsive to the changing environment and to emerging risks. Yes, our primary role is to audit and to express an opinion or a set of conclusions on the information we have attested. Our context and global guidance inspire us to use that primary function to effectively fulfill our constitutional mandate and to live up to the expectations of stakeholders, citizens, parliament, and to live up to the demands of the moment. This context, this moment, in our view, demands a shift in how public administration runs towards really embracing the values and the principles set out in Section 195 of the Constitution around how public administration should run in a way that is performance-driven, that's accountable, that's transparent, and that is characterized by integrity. It is our view that what needs to happen is for a change in how public servants approach their work in public administration. Shift from a culture of impunity or persistent transgressions and poor performance on the one hand, towards a culture of performance, of transparency and accountability. The Institute of Internal Auditors provided some interesting insight on how auditors can contribute to shifting organizational culture. Because really this is about shifting culture towards performance and compliance. And what the Institute of Internal Auditors says is that auditors can actually contribute to shifting organizational culture by inspiring those that run institutions to shift and change how they perform their allocated duty. Because that is how, that is going to be a driver of how that particular institution runs. So yeah, we can move on to the next slide. And so it's a bit of context about where we find ourselves. We also, in thinking about how can we improve our impact, increase our value, make a more solid contribution to strengthening democracy, we found that we are not alone as sides that are grappling with this question about the impact of our work. It's a topic that our global peers are also seized with, around how do they use their mandate as independent auditors of public funds to contribute to strengthening systems of transparency, of accountability, and of performance. If you look at the United States, the Government Accountability Office, which is really the AG there, in their own words, say that they would want to address current and emerging challenges to the well-being and the financial security of the American people. If you look to New Zealand, an office that we've worked pretty closely with, they say that they want to have an increased focus on examining just how well the public sector achieves positive change for New Zealand citizens. If you look to Europe, the Netherlands Court of Audit says that they recognize that citizens and businesses are the starting point of their work. Government exists to serve them. And they say that their audits do not only start with citizens and businesses, they also end with them. And of course, then the UN, in terms of the SDG goals, reasserts the role that the size can play in helping countries achieve those sustainable development goals. So now I come to the strategy. With all of that context and background, the strategy is this. Having reflected on all of the shifts and all the context, we have an ambition to make a more direct, consistent, and meaningful impact in improving the lives of the citizens of South Africa, whilst remaining the independent auditor of public funds, one that provides credible, independent insights on the financial and performance management systems and government. We aim to use our skills, our insights, our legal instruments to influence positive change in how public institutions function. The impact we aim to make is to influence those that are entrusted with the responsibility of managing public institutions to embrace their roles as custodians of public funds, to set up internal controls and systems, and to model and insist on behaviors that set up that institution for greater success, for greater accountability, for greater stability, for greater transparency. As the Institute of Internal Auditors has guided, one of the best ways to improve how public institutions are run is to shift the culture within those institutions, to shift that culture towards stewardship, integrity, accountability, and performance. We recognize that the AGSA could never do this alone. So we'll have to strengthen our collaboration with the different actors in what we've called the accountability ecosystem. And that would be those that run public administration, headed up by the accounting officer, the executive, the oversight mechanism, the legislature. It would be the public bodies charged with law enforcement and investigation. It would be civil society. It would be citizens, even more broadly. I mean, so you've heard me use the word shift quite a bit. So let me explain where we're coming from. Shifting culture towards greater stewardship, integrity, performance, efficiency, transparency, accountability. That's what will get public institutions to do more of the good thing and less of the harmful thing. So institutions that do harm are those where typically there's no transparency, there's no accountability, there's no performance. And here, maybe a case in point would be those disclaimer municipalities, the ones with the repeat disclaimers, because that's where you're able to see the harm to the institution, but also even the harm to the public, because that's where you're seeing infrastructure is not maintained, that's where you're seeing sewage running down the streets, that's where you're seeing a real detrimental impact on the well-being of citizens in that community. Institutions that embrace accountability, that manage their finances well, gradually and yet consistently improve their performance through planning, execution, and reporting. Those that operate within the provisions of law, those are the ones that are well poised to delivering on their mandate in a sustainable way. So an example would be if there's a provincial treasury that gets a clean audit, which happens quite often, right? It means that they've got good controls around financial management, performance management, and compliance. So what we then can do is say, well, this institution is well poised to start doing more good, to start delivering even better towards outcomes in that province, expenditure management in that province, support to those municipalities. So it's a good base, but we've then got to move them in the continuum from the left towards the right, from doing harm towards doing good. If it's a disclaimer, we know it's not going to happen overnight. So we've got to start shifting them consistently throughout along that continuum away from doing harm in the first instance towards doing good. So just try and put this a little bit differently. If a department or an entity or a municipality at least manages its affairs well, reports transparently, observes the legal prescripts, then indeed we can say that they are doing less harm. What we've then got to do is get them doing more good. And the journey really is about shifting more and more public institutions over time away from doing harm towards doing good. And we aim to make that contribution over this period up until 2030 and beyond. It's not going to be that overnight we can get everybody moving across that continuum to the extreme right, but we can gradually start to shift people. And what this will do is actually shift the conversation from grappling with the definition of irregular expenditure towards saying, how well are you doing in executing on your mandate? To what extent are you operating with integrity? To what extent are you continually improving the outcomes given the resources that you do have? Now, what we are also saying is that we won't be able to do this alone. We will have to do this in partnership with the people appointed to run those institutions. We would have to use our insight, our influence, our access to get them to make the right decisions to shift on a gradual basis the culture within those environments. So we aim to do this by focusing on 6 strategic goals, and I'll name them and describe them briefly. The first one is insight. It's really about saying, in the course of our audit, can we generate even better insight? Now, please stay on the slide. Please stay on the slide. That has them all. Can we generate better audit insight that give clearer information that propels accounting officers to engage in the right action and get some results? Can we shape our audit messages so that instead of having a 400-page management report with a number of different findings, how can we use that insight to then say, yes, you've got this big report, but these are the things you can focus on, and that's how you're going to drive change and get better traction. The next one is about influence. The question is, to what extent are we engaging in a way that's impactful? To what extent do we collaborate with other players in the system to get them to do what's necessary in supporting the journey? I gave an example of a provincial treasury just now. So it's about saying, well, if you've got a clean audit, how can we help you and others get to towards improving the lot of citizens in that province, whether through the provincial departments that then start to operate better, or even through the municipalities that start to operate better? And the next part is about enforcement, and that's really dealing with the Public Audit Act and the new powers that we have, to say that this instrument that we've got really can help us shift culture, because yes, it has its punitive aspect to it, which we must implement, but also in the first instance, it has the opportunity for us to flag to accounting officers the most important actions that they must take to protect resources, to stem leakage, to shift the nature of how their institutions perform. And then the next, the third of the six strategic goals is about shifting public sector culture. It's really about saying, how do we get all of the accounting officers and the public servants inspired to embrace a different way of engaging with their work? And here, one of the key partners we would look to is, let's say, the National School of Government or the DPSA, because they have, and even the PSC, because they have specific responsibilities here, which we might not have, but we have tremendous insight, tremendous access, because we're at every institution every single year, to start driving the right type of shifts in culture. The last two strategic goals really look internally. The first one is about sustainability and the other one is efficiency. Read together, they're really about making sure that we take acceptance that resources are scarce, so make sure that we operate efficiently. Make sure that we continue to lead by example in professionalism, in ethical conduct, in good governance internally. Make sure that we can sustain whatever gains we're making as an institution and lead an even stronger institution than we would have found, really upholding the legacy that has been a part of the Office of the Auditor General for many, many decades now. Those are the key strategic goals. The next few slides, Honorable Chair, really start to share with you some of the initiatives we want to undertake over the planning period. I would propose I don't go into them in too much detail. What I will say is this. 2023 is a year of preparation. It's really about making sure that we get all of our staff aligned and buying into the strategy and focusing on shifting towards it. It's also about starting to implement those things that we are already doing, but slightly in a slightly different way, so that they start to contribute to our strategic plan going forward. So, for example, we've already started to engage with civil society. The question is, how do we deepen that collaboration so that we get our insights even better? We've already started to do real-time audits. So what are the things we want to do differently going forward so that we can entrench this piece of this type of product as part of our offering? We've already started to look at how we can audit different auditees slightly differently. So how do we shape the work so that it gets the benefits we're looking for? If you look at influence, in many ways, some of the things we're already doing, it's really about making sure that we do better and more. Of sharing our insights, our messages with a broader range of stakeholders in very targeted ways, and really focusing on all of those that we would have identified as forming part of the accountability ecosystem. On enforcement, our focus remains on dealing with the MI processes. We are now 2.5 years into implementing, and we're learning a few things, and we are refining how we're approaching this so that we can start to get better and make sure that the impact of implementing this instrument is felt even more than that, what it is now. On shifting culture, one of the primary things we will do is to look at how we audit and report in a way that closes the gap between audit outcomes and the reality on the ground. And in some ways, we started to see us do this. So if you look at our more recent general report on MFMA, you're seeing that we're pushing ourselves to give greater insight so that people can understand why it's important to worry about irregular expenditure, why it's important to worry about performance information, so that we just get richer in terms of how we engage with our work. Sustainability, as I said, is really about the internally focused aspect and strengthening how we run the institution and live up to the high expectations that citizens have of us. So, and then the last one is about efficiency. So that's our strategy, that's our ambition, and that's the approach that we've chosen to engage with. If I look at the budget, before I hand over to the GAG to take you through the numbers briefly, I'd like to make a couple of points, Honourable Chair. I'm aware that in the last engagement on the annual report and in others before then, we've spoken quite a lot about the funding model of the institution. The funding model was approved back in 2008 and it's been implemented since. And the way it's implemented is that the direct staff cost of an audit is then subjected to a markup factor, which is a maximum of 2.28. And that's how we calculate the cost of an audit and the basis on which we bill for our audit. We don't generate any profits on the audits that we outsource. We also don't generate any profits on the S&T, the subsistence allowance. Our model sees us generating a surplus of between 1% and 4% every year, which is by design to be used for the necessary investments such as CapEx and other specific projects that are about building the capability of the audit office. Section 23 of the Public Audit Act sets out that the National Treasury really should top up the audit fees of the smaller auditee, those that they deem to be financially distressed. And this is where I want to highlight a particular message. With the financial health of many auditees having deteriorated since 2008. If you look at municipalities, it's not only the smaller municipalities that are struggling with financial health. If you look at state-owned entities, there are a vast number of those that have significant financial health pressure and are therefore unable to afford their audit fees. If you look at even some of the departments, there's enormous pressure on us to keep reducing audit fees. So we face pressure in terms of what we can charge and bill because there's pressure on us to reduce that. And we face pressure in terms of what we can collect. So we don't get the maximum of what we can because of the fiscal environment and the financial position of different auditees. But we also, having bills, don't get to collect all of the fees that are due to us. And it's not through a lack of trying, but that is the reality that confronts us. What then happens is that we run our institution well, we cut down on overheads, we push ourselves around efficiency, but the net basis of it is that we are unable to generate the 1 to 4% surplus. And when we do generate it, it's often not in cash because we can't collect. The top-up from National Treasury has consistently been less than what should be paid, and the collections, as I say, remain a real problem for the institution. The impact of it is that we're not able to invest in all of the CapEx that we should and all of the necessary investments that are key to us maintaining the capability of the National Audit Office. I'm also aware that there are a number of auditees that complain bitterly about how they say our fees are very expensive. We've pushed ourselves on efficiency. In fact, we've even done a sense check. We went and looked at the audit fees charged by private sector auditors. And what we found is that across all of the different levels of staff, we are charging much less than any of the larger firms, and certainly much less than any of the medium-sized firms. The medium-sized firms, on average, are charging at least 25% more than we do, and the largest firms sometimes twice as much as what we do. I say this because we do need to find a way to push back on this noise that suggests that the audit office has fees that are extraordinarily high, especially if you consider what I've just said around the statistics. But also, if you consider two other aspects, One is that when we start any audit, we tend to receive poor quality financial information, poor quality performance information, and it takes a great deal of time to get these statements right so that you get credible statements published. That's a contribution from the office, and that's a cost that comes with the work that we do. The second aspect that I wanted to highlight, which impacts on our audit fees, is just the notion that when we audit, we don't only look at financial information. So we don't only look at the financial statement. We look at performance information as well as compliance over and above these financials. And then, because of that work, we are able to give all of those charged with running those institutions, whether it's the board or the CEO or the accounting officers, all those charged with overseeing them, whether it's the executive authority or even yourself as parliament, you would get out of our office much greater level of insight, much greater level of engagement on key issues. Just the last 2 weeks, you've seen many of our staff members in a number of BRRR engagements, which we have to find a way to fund. So I wanted to just share with you this insight, because I don't know that we do that enough to remind people that the work that the office does is actually of immense value, and the costs that we pass on are certainly not that significant. So I think what we can do, Honorable Chair, is just allow the DAG to share with you the budget, just high level, DAG. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam AG. Good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. And once again, good morning, colleagues. Chair, I'll be very quick. I'll just recap on where we are in terms of our budget. You will recall the budget that you submitted to you last year. We did project a deficit of 57 million. We are tracking very well against that budget. If there's any change, Chair, it will be a slight reduction on the deficit, or as where we might break even, or as have a slight surplus. I think, Chair, this is an indication of an institution that can manage its affairs very well. However, the pressures on audit fee affordability, as the AG just mentioned right now, the collection thereof, will recall that we've got over a billion rand sitting out in debtors, and the additional cost of us implementing the revised powers as per the PAA, it is constraining our ability to invest in the capability that we require to sustain the organization. And I will share with you some of the CapEx requirements that we do need. It is important, Honorable Chair, to just acknowledge that the ability for us to track well is based on the good work that has been done by the executive and the late AG in the previous year. I know we presented to you last week the outcome of the previous financial year, but in your opening remarks, you highlighted the fact that our CFO received an award. And I think it's important, Chair, to just, for me to take a moment quickly and just indicate some of the good foundation that was laid by this team, because I think sometimes Madam AG is very modest. And I think it's building on what you were saying earlier on, when you compare our threshold rates to the other firms out there. So coming out from that environment, I was pleasantly surprised about some of the achievement that was made by the team during the COVID year that was not planned. You will all recall that come end of March last year, the hard lockdown was announced. Unlike the outside firm that has got too many choices, I think that the AG did very well. And I think that's where the industry is recognizing the CFO for the good work done around that. And it's allowing us to build for the future on a base that is solid. Most of the colleagues in the audit firms have to retrench people. I think it will be more of an exception as to what that did not happen. They have to do salary sacrifices and to choose salaries. And I'm glad to say that the AG did not do that. Within the AGSA, the decision that we made by the executive back then to not pay bonuses and not to give salary increases help us to continue on this traction check. So in terms of the next year's budget, we are projecting a slight surplus of 28 million. You will see that there's an increase in terms of the revenue. This is mainly driven by us taking back more of the work that we're doing. You'll recall that we took back Transnet However, it was a phase-in approach where we still rely to some significant extent on the CWC firm that used to assist us, but we are gradually taking more and more of the work that needs to be done, and that is why the revenue is increasing in Chair. It's not because of the rates going up. So having taken you through this, Chair, and having outlined what the strategic focus is, it will be important for us to try to start generating more reserves and for us to start generating more surpluses in the future to enable us to make the right investment in the tools and technology that we need. You will recall in the last discussion that there was a concern around the IT environment, and we are going to be making the right investment. But that's just to keep the lights on within the organization. For us to be able to deliver a much more efficient audit, it will be important for us to start investing more in the right digital tools that will allow us to do more work like we did last year around the real-time audit. And I do hope that in our discussions going forward, we're going to be able to do the best from our side. But there might be a need for us to have an honest conversation as to how do we retain some of these surpluses and how do we build the ability to invest in our capability going forward. Thank you, Chair. AJ, back to you.
Thank you very much. AJ?
Yes, Chair, there's just one last matter which relates to the audit directive. I won't take more than 2 minutes to say that, as required in the Public Audit Act, we need to consult with yourself on the changes we want to make around our approaches to the audit. In May of 2021, we gazetted the current directive. What we've done now is just look at three things we're wanting to amend, and it's really just to help us do our work slightly better. The first one is to provide for us to conduct differentiated audits so that we can start to pilot how that might look in pursuit of our objectives around reducing costs of audit, but also delivering optimal value around audit. The second part is for us to add a focus area on human resources. We had taken it out of the audit directive some time ago. Our reading of the environment is such that's an area of risk that we need to look at again. So we want to add that into our audit programs. We also wanting to add into our audit programs the environmental management aspect, so that we can look at those at the metros only. We won't burden the smaller municipalities, but we'll look at the metros only just to start to share the type of insight that can influence the right attention to environmental management. So those are the three proposed amendments to the directive. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, AJ, DHD, and the team on the presentation. Very elaborate, which was very useful for us to, even on the background, the international nature of the work being done through a global related. Setting and standards. Our actual challenges and how do we seek to deal with the matters of numbers against the achievement using the finances which have been allocated, and as well determining through such standards which areas need to be firmed up in terms of compliance. And your strategy would want to ensure improvement on the actual performance of those who do work for the entire population to gain results which are desirable in terms of their tax benefits and what they have somewhat contributed to the country out there. So, ladies and gentlemen, colleagues, honorable members, that's the presentation on the draft by the Auditor General. Are there any comments from the AG's input? Then hands.
Matafa?
Honorable Matafa Wang. I'm looking at this thing. I don't see any other one. Is there any other member who would want to speak after Honorable Matafa? So far, so good. Honorable Matafa?
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, if maybe you allow me, I'm going to request to speak with my video off. It's very windy and it keeps on telling me my connection is not stable.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair. Now, Chair, I think the presentation is very clear and very empowering. One can only commend the work that went into the preparation and reflection on the work of the AG. Post and going forward, but particularly as it relates to the six strategic goals. And I think one that actually gave me more comfort in terms of the understanding of the HGSA's environment in which we find ourselves, particularly with the previous audit outcomes from municipalities, is the one that speaks to shifting public sector culture. Because if you look at the public sector, it has been accepted that it is bedeviled by a culture of non-accountability, a culture of poor service delivery, and a culture of wastage. So I think through the efforts of the AGSA, we will be able to turn the corner and be able to make sure that the other strategic objective of enforcement also is achieved in order to assist. But just maybe on two questions. In terms of the persisting challenges of outstanding audit fees, I just wanted to find out what is the picture currently, and if whether is there maybe a view from the AG in terms of how can those that are defaulters be assisted to ensure that they are able to pay the fees, particularly as now the AG is contemplating increments of this particular audit fees, and we know in the past we have heard that there are certain challenges in terms of recouping this particular fees. And the last one, Chair, is also just on the operations. I'm just interested to find out when the audit work is being done in the client's space of operation, normally a management letter is issued. When a new cycle of audit happens, do the office of the AG relook at the previous management letter issues, interfacing it with the new predetermined objectives? Now, my question is based on the reason that on a regular basis, we hear of recurring transgressions. So my interest is to find out if whether do we have the capacity in the office of the AG to ensure that the previous audit opinions are also looked at the same time as when the new audit cycle commences, and if whether the capacity does not exist, will increasing the capacity carry financial implications for the office? And if so, how can the committee assist to ensure that as the plan is presented to us is implementable, but equally we are able to take stock of where we come from as we move forward? I will pause there, Chair, for now. Thank you very much for the opportunity to engage. And once again, thank you very much for a very empowering presentation we received. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Matafa AG.
Thank you very much, Chair, and Honorable Matafa. The questions are well noted. Well, thank you very much for your compliment. The two questions on outstanding fees, the defaulters, we do assist them with ring fencing arrangements so that they can pay the old debt. And I know that Honorable Menzana made a suggestion last week, which we can incorporate into our existing ring fencing arrangements so that they become even more effective. So we do help them. But fundamentally, what would need to happen to sort out the affordability issues on all of these are three things. One is we need to reduce our audit scope and even relook together with the National Treasury on the reporting obligations of those municipalities. That's the first thing. And hence the piloting of the differentiated audit approaches. The second one is to, I think for us, to accept that affording some of these municipalities the opportunity to keep submitting and resubmitting new information in the hope that their audits are coming through, that license actually we need to cut back on, because it just increases cost with no real benefit to that institution. So what might happen, and maybe I must just highlight this transparently, what might happen is you might see a greater regression in audit outcomes in the initial period when we stop allowing far too many corrections to financial statements. The third thing is for us to continue to work with those municipalities to get their basics right so that they can manage their finances, the resources they have, better than what they're doing. So that's how we need to deal with our outstanding fees. The operations, in terms of previous year's audit findings, when we finish an audit, we give the management report, as you rightly said, and our expectation is that there be an audit action plan that's crafted by that audit team. In fact, the MFMA even requires that the NEC for COPTA, in the instance of municipalities, that NEC satisfy themselves as to the existence of those audit action plans. What we find is that those action plans are either not of good quality, but worse still, even when they've been prepared, they're not implemented. And that's why you will end up with recurring findings, because there isn't a consistent attention to responding to the AG's findings. And so the capacity you speak of, Honorable Matafa, should really be about the capacity within the municipality. And it's not about new people being appointed or new positions being created or new capacity. It's about making sure that the right people are appointed, that they are supervised appropriately, that they are monitored and held accountable for their delivery on what has been set up. Because that's how you're going to start building a culture of following up on audit findings and consistently improving the internal control environment. Even if you put the capacity in the office of the AG to follow up, it still wouldn't deal with the real issue at the audit level, which is the discipline and the ability to follow up on prior year audit findings. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, AG. In line with what you're referring to, how can we at best in the determination of the performance of a municipality, you'd find out that the municipality itself does somewhat have those control mechanisms, whether through institutions which exist. There may be, for example, they would have the internal audit unit. They would have the audit committee in place, the risk related capacities and so forth, but there is less accountability though you would have those kinds of mechanisms which ought to assist in terms of the build up of improvement in as far as accountability is concerned. And how can we, looking into your six strategic areas, in enhancing the improvement of a functionality at an institutional level, that is the audits, making use of these kinds of institutions, their own existence, noting that they exist, they get paid, and the value is far less than what they ought to somewhat be paid for, and that's one area. The second area becomes visible when you deal with certain institutions. Look into we received a report of one other institution which is heavy on infrastructure, and this institution its own performance is judged on its ability to provide a service which unfortunately currently has got a number of pitfalls on it, and you find the audit which refers to the performance outcomes without recognizing that failure, and you ask a question as to how on earth can you seek to minimize the actual judgment on the performance, having looked into the performance area, the performance report of such an institution, and you fail to capture the harm which is enjoyed by the population through the failure of the provision of a key service, which is the ultimate existence of such institutions. So the balance between the financial and non-financial information for your audit, and as well present that as an outcome which is going to be fair in the eye of everybody. You could amplify that by this bigger factor through a number of people who would ask this question: how can this institution get a clean audit but it fails to provide very minimal in terms of its own outcomes? You find in the area the roads are not in order, electricity trips at the time, the street lights are off for longer periods, and such an institution would receive the financial audit which is clean, but the performance of such an institution does not give sight to that good work on the financial report which has been somewhat audited. How can the office of the AG deepen the audit of such non-financial information so that we could create a balance between the two, and therefore strengthen the credibility of the audit outcomes of the Auditor General of South Africa? So those are the kinds of things that may be through your own strategy, and as we oversight the office of the Auditor General, we would want to fare those instances that relate to improving the performance, the image of the Auditor General through these kinds of things, which probably the South African population ought to gain confidence on. I think something you referred to even yourself earlier on. I think those are the things that one would want to speak on. If you have a comment, AG, you are free to do so. I see a hand. Let me just check where it's coming from. AG?
Okay, thanks, Chair. So I agree with you. We have a wonderful opportunity to repackage, to rethink how we engage with the audit of performance information and how we report on it. Because many of the insights that you're looking for actually are there. We tend to put them in the management report, But there's no reason why we can't start thinking about making sure that in briefing yourself that are responsible for oversight, you have the benefit of the insight that we have, we've gathered through the work that we do. So I think there's about how do we tweak the work, but importantly, how do we tweak the reporting so that you get that level of transparency? Because that's how you're also going to be able to start engaging with those auditees around the substance of their annual performance plan. Because even if they're able to give you an annual performance report that's useful and reliable, and we can tell you about that because we're forced to, for as long as their performance objectives are not shaped in a way that's getting them to deliver on their designated mandate, we're going to continue to struggle with demonstrating that those public institutions are delivering in a way that's expected. So if you are able to sort out the rhythm of engaging with the substance of those performance reports and the performance plans, we'll be able to start winning. So it's definitely part of our work program, and we've heard you and we've heard you well. On the one about the control mechanisms and trying to make sure that internal audit committees, risk committees work well, one of the things we've done is publish a preventative control guide, which helps the accounting officer focus on strengthening those players in the ecosystem, internal audit committees, but it also assists those in oversight to drive the type of conversation through oversight that allows them to get the accounting officer to worry about effectiveness of those functions. So that guide is available. What we'll look to do is see if there's opportunity to do more and similar guides, but even to elevate its usefulness and accessibility to those that are charged with oversight responsibility. But on the part about performance information, we've heard you well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, AG. There's a hand from Constance and from Honorable Singh and Honorable Kopani, as they would follow each other.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want you to make a comments on the presentation and to welcome the presentation of the Auditor General. Firstly, to say that I repeat what I said now the other day, that their visibility has got a lot of impact on the broader community of citizens, because now people are beginning to understand what is happening in their municipalities. And that includes looking at their presentation that about 186 billion vanished from South African municipalities in just 10 years. So I think the enforcement, the legislation which is available for the AG and the law enforcement to make sure that these monies must be tracked down, the bills must be tracked down, and people must be taken to account for that. I also want to note or to comment the office, especially involving like broad-based Black economic empowerment the way it is right now, because this has always been looked at, can I continue? Hello?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was saying that I want to comment the office for involving or maintaining the broad-based economic empowerment to the level where it is right now. And that has been happening for the 3 consecutive years. So it's very important for our country because we know our history that anything to do with finances or with such high offices or auditing companies, it always has been a white type of environment. And more especially when they also look at the government's policy on 80% of black women audit funds, which are also empowered to be taken care of. And I'm very happy, pleased on that. And to like to say to the AG that is well done, and we are, it's clear that there is a level of transformation. Want to say to you, do more. We appreciate the work which you are doing, and especially that now our people are beginning to understand the language of AG, that people didn't understand what is a qualified report, and think that when you get a qualified report, means well done. And when you get unqualified report, means you were the worst. So those type of terminology or languages, our people are beginning to understand. So those are the key comments for my guys. Thank you very much.
Should I comment, Jay? Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Siyapo Sengwe, and thank you for commending us. I have heard you well. You're saying let's make sure we sustain the visibility, the simplicity of our language, but also let's make sure we don't lose the focus on driving transformation and demonstrating that implementing the aspirations of transformation and the BBB policy can happen in the context of clean administration, and it can happen with visible and sustained impact on the people that are intended as beneficiaries. And I think what we'll do is make sure that that remains a solid part of our strategy going forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. Good morning to all the colleagues and AG and her team. Jefferson, please forgive me if some of the things that I may raise were raised in meetings that I did not attend. So I want to apologize in advance. But thank you for the presentation. Jefferson, I just wanted to know from the AG's office the additional quote-unquote teeth that have been given in terms of legislation with certificates of debt. What progress, what report can we receive in that regard? Because if you've been given the teeth, have those teeth been biting? And I think I saw a comment by somebody there, whether it was on Twitter or Facebook, that, we do not have teeth. So that's the one thing. And Jefferson, I think the very, very important point that you raised is the issue of, municipalities and institutions may be audited and there will be comments. But when you check what's happening on the ground in terms of real service delivery, it's completely lacking. And I think in that regard, South Africans spoke, and they spoke very loudly on the 1st of November for all of us to hear that they are getting increasingly fed up of lack of service delivery and corruption and wasteful expenditure, fruitless expenditure, etc. And I think the Office of the AG in particular has now the additional responsibility to ensure that we address the concerns of South Africans, let alone that politicians will have to do that at different levels. So having said that, Chair, the AG also said that in many cases of the smaller entities, they are clean. They are clean, but the bigger entities is where you find the problem. Now, one would think that in the bigger entities, they have the ability to employ more people in the financial management sector or divisions, more professional people, and one cannot understand why, you know, they are continuing to have problems. Because it doesn't mean the bigger you are, the more problems you should have. In fact, the bigger you are, you should have less problems because you can employ more people to do the work correctly. So, on the question of value for money audit, is it not a possibility that where you find that institutions and municipalities have been doing relatively well in terms of financial management, then you spend less time on looking at the financial management aspects, but start looking at value for money in those institutions, so that the public will see that, you know, you're moving away gradually from financial management to value for money auditing. And I think there will be some very, very interesting revelations when you go to value for money auditing, like we had during the COVID period, when we found that items were, you know, prices were inflated 10, 20, 50 times more. So can that not be part of your strategy moving forward? Because you did say to the chairperson that, yes, it is on your radar screen, but perhaps we need to be informed of what details, give us the details of this program, not today, but moving forward. How are you going to have this gradual shift from financial management, auditing of financial management, moving to value for money? Because I think that is going to instill confidence in South Africa, but do it in an incremental stage. So I just thought I'll make a general comment and find out, because, you know, when you say local government is regressing, I mean, it doesn't sound good. When are we going to reach a stage when we say, well, they are improving and not regressing? Perhaps, chairperson, I don't know, under your chairpersonship or this committee, we must suggest to, you know, SCOPA and other committees and to National Treasury and to the financial accountant, etc., that there is a come together with SALCA and everybody else. So everybody is on the same page, meet for a week and drum in the issue of financial management and value for money. And perhaps that's what South Africa would need, some kind of comfort that something is going to be done about, you know, these adverse audit outcomes that we get in many instances. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Singh. AJ?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Singh. Three questions. On the additional teeth, we've got a session set up with yourself together with SCOPA next week to give you feedback, specific feedback on how we're doing in implementing those parts. Because I think it warrants a full conversation. There's been a few audit cycles and the volume, but also the product is still where things are. The municipalities, you know, one of the things that we see is that we've got to help accounting officers understand how audit helps them solve their problems. Not see audit as yet another additional headache, but rather embrace the audit process as one that actually helps them understand what to tweak, what to fix if they're going to drive better delivery, less leakage, better protection of resources. So that's the task that we are setting ourselves in terms of shaping the type of engagement with accounting officers to help them see how audit actually helps them. And similarly, the one about value for money audits, we heard your request to say, can we have a specific detailed program that shows the incremental shifts around value for money audits? So we'll make sure that we provide you with that. What I will offer as a quick response, because you gave the provincial treasury as an example, once they are clean, you don't have to spend such a great level of time auditing them, but you can have a useful conversation with them on their mandate and start to shift them towards doing good with the strength that they have. So that's one of the ways to do it. But I think I've heard your cry around the value for money. Thank you.
Thank you very much, AG. These are pertinent matters. Yes, we've already scheduled a meeting which is going to deal with those specificities, which we ought to take them forward. The matters that we need to worry about to ensure that we are moving in as far as the implementation of the Public Audit Act amendments. Honorable Kopane? Honorable Kopane? Imana?
Yes, sir, but can you hear me now?
I hear you now.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Chairperson, and good morning, everyone. Firstly, let me take the opportunity to join my colleagues to appreciate the report that has been presented to us. It also gave me hope to realize that there are men and women who are really willing to take our country forward. If you listen to the Auditor General when she was presenting the report before us. Chair, one of the things that I read, that is the overview by the Deputy Auditor General, where mentioning that there are still some pushbacks and intimidation. Apparently, the last few years, there have been regular, obstructions, some pushback, intimidations against the staff to do their constitutional mandate. So I wanted to find out what is it that they do to protect the staff, because it affected the morale of the staff. I remember in some of the cases in the Free State where people were also end up being killed while they were doing their job. What is it that the office is doing to protect the staff? Because if really there's an intimidation to the staff, it clearly says that this is a serious problem that we need to deal with. If maybe the Auditor General can just explain what is it that is they are doing to protect the staff regarding this intimidation. Are there any criminal charges that is being opened, or what is happening? The other thing, Chair, that I want to understand is the technological advancement. Definitely COVID has changed everybody's life forever. We don't know what does the future hold for us. And definitely things have changed. So I want to find out his office, her office, in terms of how the COVID has affected them to do their oversight responsibility, and how ready are they, if maybe we stay in the same situation, to come with innovative way of doing things going forward. Are they ready in terms of how they are going to do things going forward, if ever COVID will be there? What is it that they are prepared? Because definitely it has affected how they will do their oversight responsibility. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Member Kopane. AG?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honorable Kopane. On the protection of our staff, we haven't had calls to register any criminal charges against anybody. The only other than the instance where one of our staff members was actually shot at, but that was a number of years ago, probably about 3 years ago now. As things stand, we haven't had any of such instances. However, we are not complacent about it, because we know that the instances of working remotely over the last 2 years has reduced the tendency for people to intimidate our staff and threaten them. But we're not yet complacent. The things we're doing, I'd say, are threefold. One is we work very closely with the FAPS as well as with the leadership in different provinces to highlight risks and to make sure that we keep our staff safe. The second thing we do is we work very closely with the auditees themselves, the leadership in those auditees, so that the physical space where our teams are actually secured. The other aspect is also to train our staff around awareness for how to keep themselves safe. And it's not, we have to do that because we have to make sure that our teams are alert and know how to respond when they see any sort of threat. It's a matter that enjoys our continued attention, and it's something that, as I say, we're not yet complacent on. although there's been a reduction in those instances. Through COVID, so the last 2 years of operating under COVID conditions and lockdowns have really pushed our office. We've actually done more work in that time than ever before. So we've been able to innovate and operate differently and collaborate with our body keys to share information without physical contact and to find different ways of conducting our work. We continue to learn on things that we mustn't go back to and on things we must continue to do differently. But I think we've done quite well over the last 2 years of operating under these conditions. Unless it's, I'm not sure if the DAG would want to add on to any of those two aspects.
Thanks, AJ. Thanks, Honorable Chair. I'll add on the second one. I mean, like AJ have said, we did a lot of work last year. We obviously forced to work offsite, but like we all appreciate that they say you should not waste a good crisis. So out of us having to do a lot of work remotely, we find new ways of doing work. And that was the part I was talking to you in the earlier presentation about our investment. So we found that we can actually access data remotely. And what that means is that you've got data, you've got access to the entire population. And instead of working on a sample basis, when you could go to an ODT and pick a sample, now our specialist data analytics are able to assist us in analyzing the entire population. So we are increasing our focus in terms of doing that in some of the bigger ODTs. But we think that there will be a lot of benefits in doing it across the entire ODT population. So if you think about one of our goals, which is to change the culture through sharing the right insight and to into some of the questions that were raised earlier in terms of value for money, and some of these things using technology will allow us to do more with less and be able to share much more information. So we are hoping that even if COVID gets under control, we're not going to take our foot off the pedal in terms of leveraging technology to assist us to do much more audit and be able to provide better insight to yourself and other stakeholders. Thank you, Chair.
Well, thank you very much, AG and DAG. Gladly, members who have indicated to speak on the matters did ask and comment on the presentation by the AG, something which is somewhat a bit appreciable, where the AG strategy indicates the level. You see your graphic representation of some movements of ODTs from where they would be viewed as so bad to be where they would have been somewhat at the level that is appreciable of their own value in society. That kind of a graphic presentation is indicative of a clustered allocation of the public sector institutions in the observance of both a good their work ethic in as far as their financial capability is concerned. And something which looking into where I come from, that it might be that what is being done at home to improve the level of education and absorbance of such absorption of such into the stream of governments, mainly at the local government level, might ring bells in the required improvement of standard of performance. We're still to see whether that would impact positively. It's our hope and wish that such things would be more appreciated for active participants, citizenry, which would make those who are part of a government to account but to perform better as well. So AG, your draft strategy has been received by the committee. As you have had an opportunity for these discussions, engaged by the committee, what is left is that the committee would come back with a clearer indication on the area. Maybe so far you have picked up those areas which are areas of concern from our side, and therefore you do likewise in terms of the improvement on the draft, of course, and thereafter would indicate which of the a draft strategy going forward. So if there is nothing else on this, I think we need to appreciate that as one other area, which then relates to gazetting your standard of performance as per requirement. It's something which I think we need to encourage, as I have already had some discussion with the Minister of Finance on the permanency of the position of the Accountant General, who would somewhat enhance the observation of the standard procedure which is observed in terms of conducting such audits from the part of the Auditor General's office, and the quick response when there are matters that need the intervention of Treasury, when there are areas which need some intervention by the office of the Accountant General. So there is a keenness to move towards that, because to be fair on track, you must ensure that those you work with, those who cause the effectiveness of your work, are somewhat very responsive at all times that you seek their ear on matters that could hamper your independence and as well your effectiveness as the Office of the Auditor General. So we're going to then get back to you after these discussions, which in terms of our program, we are going to meet soon to finalize all those matters and get back to you, AG. Thank you very much. From my side. Is there any other thing, colleagues, before we close the meeting?
No. From my side.
That's it. Two. Three. It looks like, colleagues, we all agree that the meeting should go on adjournment. Thank you very much, all those who have been in attendance, and well appreciate your contributions, colleagues, and it's well off. Let's tighten things up and work together with the Office of the Auditor General to make things to work for the country and improve accountability, which is going to lead to ethical conduct. Thank you, colleagues. The meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you. I miss Mlenzana. Where is Mlenzana?
I'm trying to go to your network and get you to interview.
Oh, by the way, you better go stage one.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Recording stopped.